Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And tonight with me is my co-host Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hello, Andrew. A couple things. First of all, I'm going to let you know we've got a new cult for you tonight. So it will be a cult you've never heard of. And a cult I had never heard of, actually, until I stumbled across Edgar's social media. But I also am going to preface this with the fact that you know me and names. I'm going to do my best to pronounce these names. I actually Googled some of the pronunciations. So Edgar can let me know after I do his introduction whether I got any of these pronunciations correct, including his last name, because I forgot to ask him before we got started here. So today we have a powerful guest joining us. His name is Edgar Lueda. Edgar is a dedicated advocate speaking out against the World Mission Society Church of God, also known as the WMSCOG. This group was founded in 1964 and headquartered in South Korea, was established by Un Sung Hung, who claimed to be the second coming of Jesus. Today, the church is led by Zongil Jun, who members revere as the God the Mother. WMSCOG has been widely criticized for its manipulative mind control cult tactics that isolate followers from their families. Through social media, Edgar is not only sharing his own experience, but also amplifying the voice of other ex-members, helping to expose the truth about this organization. Edgar, welcome to the show.
What a beautiful introduction. Thank you for that and welcome. I'm very happy that you guys have me here today and looking forward to sharing my story with you.
And all I can say is, holy shit. When Melody said there's a new cult, I always love hearing new cults because it's something that that's kind of the heart, the meat and potatoes of our podcast is exposing these cults. But when she read what she read, I was like, holy shit. So Edgar, take us through the story. Where would you like to start?
Yeah, so let me tell you, I guess, a little bit of how it kind of started, a little bit about myself as well. So, you know, I'm a former member of the World Mission Society Church of God, 10 and a half year member. I joined when I was about 18, 19 years old, and I left in 2021. So joined December 2010 and left in the early 2021. So yeah, it was a, you know, wild ride. But I, you know, from the beginning, the way that I joined the church, obviously I didn't know anything about this cult. And, you know, I had a friend of mine who was actually a, you know, very good friend, but I hadn't seen him in a few years. We had worked together, you know, in a previous job. And then, you know, kind of didn't see him for a while. And then one day he shows up at my house randomly. And it was a weekday. It's probably like 11 o'clock at night. I'm with my wife and my son at the time. My son's like 3 years old. And he comes knocking on the apartment complex. And, you know, I opened the door, and again, I haven't seen him in a couple of years, right? So I see him standing in my front door, and he's dressed in a suit and tie. And I'm like, well, this is kind of weird. You know, at first I'm like, man, this guy's a narc, or, you know, I don't know what he got himself into. So I'm kind of like, what's going on? And I let him inside the house, and, you know, he starts talking to me and telling me he joined this church. And, you know, it was very, very weird, because I'm like, you know, why would you come to my house at 11 o'clock at night and kind of tell me about this church? So I thought that was weird at first, but, you know, I humored him. I let him talk, and, you know, he tried to convince me that Jesus had already come back a second time. And so I'm like, you know, I don't know too much about the Bible, but that doesn't sound right. And I'm like, so where is this Jesus? Where did he come from? And he's like, oh, well, he came from South Korea. And he was like, you know, you should come and study at the church. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, I really don't want to go. I was like, but tell you what, I was like, are you asking me to go right now? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll make you a deal. I was like, if you call the leader of the church right now, put it on speakerphone, and, you know, I hear him say that it's okay for me to come to the church at this hour at night, then I'll go, because I know there's no church that's open at this hour of the night. And he calls them, and they're like, yeah, bring him, you know, bring his family, bring, you know, whatever they need. Are they hungry, thirsty, whatever? So, you know, I'm a man of my word, so I ended up going with them. But that should have been the first red flag that, you know, they're open this late at night, you know. And then when we drive, you know, I'm from Wichita, Kansas. So when we drive to the church, it's a neighborhood. It's a house. I'm expecting a building. So we get to this house, and I'm like, you sure this is the church? He's like, yeah, it's a house church. So we go inside, you know, they start, we meet the leaders, which was a deacon at that time. And so they're preaching to us, and, you know, they start connecting stuff in the Bible. And, you know, at this time I'm very, you know, illiterate when it comes to the Bible, very biblically ignorant. So I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Everything that they were saying made a lot of sense. So to make a long story short, we ended up getting baptized that night. You know, their whole spiel is that, you know, in the Bible, it tells you need to keep the Passover in order to be saved. And unless you keep this Passover, you know, you're going to be destroyed during the last plagues that are going to come hit the earth. You know, and they like to use a lot of fear tactics, like, you know, they'll talk about World War III and nuclear war and natural disasters. And, you know, so they say all these things in order to scare you into getting baptized. So we got baptized that night in a bathtub, you know, and I'm not going to lie, it was very weird. You know, I was a little freaked out, but also they just freaked you out with world war, nuclear, thermal war. So, you know, you kind of do it. And I just remember that at the time there was a lot of love bombing, you know, and they made us feel very welcome. I will say that I realized later on that love bombing is part of the process, right? So they love bomb you in order to make you feel welcome and, you know, kind of make you lower your guard down so that the indoctrination process can begin. But yeah, man, that's kind of how I joined the WMSCOG.
Wow. So this friend of yours lived, you said you're from Wichita, Kansas, and was he local? Like, you haven't talked to him in a couple of years and he shows up at 11 o'clock at night. Was he, how far away does he live from you?
So, at that time he lived pretty far, but not too far. I wouldn't say like maybe 20 minutes away. But, you know, the reason why, you know, he came to my house that late at night, obviously he's out now. So he's actually my best friend. So I helped him get out of the cult now, which is kind of weird because he brought me into the cult and I actually am the one who helped him get out of the cult. But he was the first member that was baptized by that cult when they came to Kansas. So he was their first recruit. So they gassed him up and made him feel like, you know, he was on a mission to save the world. So that's why he was going all over the place and, you know, bringing converts in for them, you know, because some of the leadership is Korean, obviously, you know, so they can't even speak English that well, but they make sure to send some members that do speak fluent English to actually lead the churches. But yeah, that's kind of how that happened.
So he essentially was recruiting. He was out that night running around, knocking on doors, recruiting people.
Yes.
And I guess he thought of you. Go ahead, Melody.
I was just going to say that is the most accelerated recruiting tactic I have ever heard.
Yeah.
Of. Like, come here tonight, 11 o'clock at night, right now. We're going to baptize you right now. I have never heard of a recruiting tactic that accelerated. That is like boom, boom, boom. You don't even have time to think. And I wanted to know, Did your wife and child go with you, or was it just you?
Yeah, so they actually went with me. You know, at the time, you know, I remember my wife, before we went, actually went with him, she even like leaned, you know, over to me and she was like, well, you did say that we were going to look for a church and, you know, this might be a sign from God. Little did I know what we were actually going to get ourselves into. So yeah, they ended up coming with me, but, you know, to your point about, you know, the acceleration process of how they recruit the members, they have specific studies that they give you as soon as you get there. It doesn't matter who you are. As soon as you get there, if you try to like leave and say, well, can I have some time to think about it? They already have some like studies prepared, you know, to basically let you know, like, well, you know, if you leave here and you don't keep this Passover, you don't get baptized, you could get hit by a bus. Or how do you know the world's not going to end, you know, right now? You know, how do you know that, you know, you just learned the truth? And so everyone out there, including your family and your friends and even your significant other, they could be tools of the devil. And if they're trying to get you away from coming to our church, then, you know what I mean? You're in a spiritual bind, and you need to, the only place that you can, you know, find the truth and be saved is here. This is your safe place. And so they got this whole arsenal already prepared. It's so deceptive. You know, it's basically from the get-go, they teach you a us versus them mentality, if that makes any sense.
I was going to ask you a very personal question and you already answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Where were you in your mindset that somebody comes to your door at 11 o'clock at night and says, you have to join this church, come with me, and that you would say, okay, even though you hadn't made that phone call, so you heard that it was legit, or that the leader was actually up at that night. I'm just wondering, why would somebody walk out and do that at 11 o'clock at night? But then you said your wife and you were looking for a religion to join or a church to join, right?
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, obviously it was a very ignorant move on my end, but also keep in mind that they prey on the young people. And I was like 18 or 19 at the time. So, I mean, my head was not, you know, all there. And, you know, of course, if this would have been now, yeah, I would have shut that down immediately. And that time, you know, I was more open and I guess searching for the truth.
Okay.
And, you know, he got me at a vulnerable time. And plus, I trusted my friend, right? I mean, fair enough, I hadn't seen him in a while, but he was a good guy. So I was like, he wouldn't lead me astray. And then also a little bit of my bravado took over because, you know, I had told him there's no way this church is open this late at night. So when he proved me wrong, and I had already given them my word that, you know, if they answered and said I could come, I would go. Well, I'm a man of my word, so I ended up going. Of course, I regret it, but that's how it played out.
And also, the second half of that question would have been, you're correct, they prey on the young and vulnerable. So how many years ago are we talking about here?
This was in 2010.
Wow, 15 years ago. Okay. Wow. And all right, so continue with your story. So I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, so, you know, as we get more, you know, we dive deeper into the church, the recruitment process and the indoctrination process, like, it's very speedy in that place. So they try to get you to become a teacher so that, you know, you can go out and also recruit members, because that's their bread and butter, is they want to make, you know, as many people come to the church, and they want you to be the one pulling them. That's one of the reasons why they heavily focus on the youth, because the youth, they have so much energy, you know, they're not as committed. Sometimes they get them, you know, without family. They love to get university students. They're very active at, you know, college campuses all over the world. And let me just mention this, it's a pretty big group. There's 3.92 million members registered in the church. They have about 7,800 churches worldwide in about 175 different countries. So it's a pretty big cult. And I just want to bring that up, because they're very active in the college campuses. They also like to go to Walmarts a lot, anywhere where there's like large groups of people. And so, you know, yeah, as the years start going by, you know, immediately they saw that I had the ability to teach well. So they always want to capitalize on those kind of members to, you know, bring other people in. So I was bringing a lot of friends, you know, a lot of my family. I brought my mom, my dad, my brother, my cousin. You know, unfortunately, my cousin is actually still in the church. He's actually a deacon now, and he doesn't even speak to me. The rest of my family, I got out. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like I said, it's a us versus them mentality. But yeah, when I was inside the church, man, you fully believe the doctrine. They're very focused on doomsday prophecies. It's just like any other cult, you know, like that's their bread and butter, is to, you know, kind of teach people these doomsday prophecies, because what that does is it makes the people, one, they're so fearful that the end of the world could happen literally any day, that you pour out all your energy into the recruitment process, you give all your money to the church. I mean, it's wild, man. I mean, I've seen there's arranged marriages in the church. I remember when I first joined the church, you know, there was talks about nuclear war that was getting ready to come any day now. So we were discouraged from having kids. There's so many stories of you know, female members that were told, you know, the force into having abortions because the church looked down upon, you know, women being pregnant at that time, because why would you want to be pregnant during, you know, the end of the world? Right. And so that they want to do that, not because they actually care about the children. It's because to them, they look at the children as like, you know, a burden. They want the young people to not have anything to hold them back, so that they can train these young people up and either recruit wherever they're found, or send them somewhere else to another state, another city, to go preach and establish their own churches. So this place is really run, you know, like an organization. Like,
Melody, do you have a question?
I just had a statement. I mean, yeah, exactly. They don't want the divided attention. They want the members to not be able to say, well, I got to go home and take care of my children. No, we don't want you to have to go home and take care of your children. We want you recruiting more members, which makes perfect sense. But I would like, if you could, Edgar, if you could go into explaining some of the teachings and then correct any of my mispronunciations of the two leaders that I mentioned in the introduction. Could you explain some of that, the teachings, to us? Those are really different and foreign to me, and I'm sure Andrew as well.
And if we pause that 1 second, and I'm sorry to anybody who says that I interrupt, but I want to ask Edgar, that one of the first things that your friend said to you was that he was, this leader was the second coming of Jesus, correct?
Yes.
What, to me, and I was brought up in the Catholic Church, but in the Jewish faith, they believe that Jesus did not come and that he is coming. So I have no idea. That made no sense. But what made you believe that this man was the second coming of Jesus?
Yeah. So, you know, to answer kind of both of your questions on that, because that's one of their teachings, is the second coming of Jesus is actually this guy An San Hong. And so what they use is they're very deceptive, because they use the actual Bible that most people have in their houses, right? It's not like Jehovah's Witness or, you know, some form of Hebrew Israelism, or even Mormons, where they have their own literature. This place uses the Bible you have on your own shelf. And that's what makes it very dangerous, because let's say they run into someone who genuinely believes in the Bible. Well, they can twist that Bible you have on your shelf and make it say what they want it to say, you know, because what they do is they don't read the Bible chronologically. They go, you know, they jump from place to place and make it say what they want it to say. They cherry
twist it. They twist it and they spin it into their favor. Yeah.
So, you know, for when it comes to the An San Hong prophecies, they have like prophecies that are kind of laid out, like, you know, who, where, what, and why. So like, you know, where they have a study called Coming from the East. And so they'll use a couple of vague verses in Revelations or Isaiah, which is in the New Testament and Old Testament. And they'll basically, you know, take verses that say, you know, he will come from the East, but it's not talking about, you know, Christ. Some of those prophecies, you know, it's kind of theological, but like, just to make it short, you know, some of those prophecies they're talking about Cyrus, who was an actual historical figure, but it says he's going to come from the east. Well, they'll just take that verse because it says he will come from the east, and they'll apply it to An San Hong, and they'll say, look, he came from the east, from the far east. They'll go to the book of Revelations, and then they'll take a verse in Revelation chapter 7 where it says an angel will come from the east having the seal of the living God. And then they'll you know, basically twist that scripture and add their own words to basically make it sound like, you know, this prophecy is talking about, you know, east of Israel, which is South Korea. So, you know, how they get there, there's a lot of mental gymnastics and a lot of wordplay, but, you know, they'll do that essentially with all these different doctrines that they have. So, you know, when it says, when it comes to the point of, well, why did he need to come from the east, from South Korea? They'll say it's because he needed to restore something called the Passover, which a lot of people would know nowadays as, you know, communion or the Last Supper. They'll say that An San Hong was actually, he had to come back in the last days. He needed to be born again because that Passover, that communion was lost. It was destroyed. There was no church in the world that was keeping it for over 2,000 years. And so that sounds kind of ignorant because we know that there are multiple churches that keep what's called communion, right? Or the Eucharist. But they say, well, that's not Passover. If you actually read in the Bible, it actually mentions the word Passover, not communion, not Eucharist. And so they'll manipulate the scriptures in order to tell you that this teaching has been lost and that only the second coming of Christ can restore it. Which later I came to find out that he didn't restore it. There was actually a church before him that had already, you know, restored the feast, one of them being the Passover. It's the called the Worldwide Church of God, led by Herbert Armstrong, who already passed away. But yeah, so, you know, they have all these different prophecies, you know, also when they'll say that he had to be born exactly in 1918 and he had to be baptized in 1948. And they have prophecies of the fig tree and prophecies called the prophecy of King David in order to verify that. But if you look at my channel, I have a lot of videos where I kind of break down those doctrines, how they make no sense. But to answer your point, the way they jump to these conclusions is by just twisting the scriptures, you know, and they'll grab one verse and make it say something that it doesn't really say.
And let me guess, Edgar, especially because you were young and anybody else who's young, they make you feel when they're bringing you in and doing this, I'm going to call this accelerated recruiting because that's what it is. But let me guess that they make you feel so special, like you are so, you must be one of the chosen ones. And that's why you're here and you're here for that purpose. And if you don't take advantage of this opportunity now, you won't be saved. And I'm sure it's something along those lines. Am I right?
Yes, spot on, 100%. So to them, you know, their big spiel is, you know, we got to be the 144,000 chosen servants, you know, in the book of Revelation. And so only 144,000 are really the saved. Like, other people will be saved too, but the 144,000, when World War III is breaking out, when the natural disasters are breaking out, super volcanoes and missiles are hitting the floor, the 144,000, they get to walk through all of that. They will not be touched. They will ascend to heaven alive with the female God, which is to them Zongil-Jah. But, you know, it's ironic that it's funny. I'm glad you brought that point up, because when I first joined the church in 2010, she was probably in her late 50s, somewhere around there. And I remember that the whole time they were teaching us that was the prophecy, that when World War III broke out and everything hit the fan, that those who were the special chosen children of her, the 144,000, we would go to heaven alive with her. In other words, she would not die. And now, from, you know, I've been out for like, you know, 4 years now. And what I'm hearing is the church is changing their teachings on that because she's getting a lot older. So now they know that she's inevitably going to pass away. Now they're taking away hymns that we used to sing where it mentions that she would go up to heaven alive with us. And they're already beginning to say, well, there's a chance that she might die. And they're probably going to end up blaming the members for it when she does die, because they did that with the original leader, An San Hong, when he died. died, he wasn't supposed to die. But when he died, they blamed the members. So I assume when she dies, they're probably going to blame the members by saying something like, well, she was ready to go to heaven and you guys didn't change fast enough. So now she went to heaven and she passed the torch to the general pastor who's also helping her lead the church currently.
Oh, I have several questions. First, the concept of the 144,000. Melanie, doesn't the house of Yahweh have that?
Yes, I was not gonna have a question, but I was gonna say, guess what, Uggar? You probably won't be surprised, but I was one of the 144,000 in my cult too. And my cult my cult leader was one of the two witnesses spoken of in Revelations, and he was gonna lead us, and we were gonna be the only chosen people. I mean, the story is there's so many parallels. These stories and they're so close to my cult and the same tactics, it's unbelievable.
And so that comes my question. These and Melody and I have said that many of these cult leaders like have a playbook. Like there's got to be this Illuminati playbook out there somewhere that cult survivors pay a lot of money for, and that they can pull all these ideas from. Because this is not just the House of Yahweh and not just your cult, but there's several other cults that go by the 144,000 as well. You know, there's 5-8 billion people in the world. How are these 144,000 people chosen?
It's mentioned in the book of Revelation. That's really rhetorical. Right. It's in the Bible, right. That's why they use it, because it's in the Bible.
And the Bible was written how many years ago, right? 2,000, or
too
was
many.
Written over 2,000, too many. So haven't the 144,000 already, you see, the math doesn't work.
The math ain't mathing.
Okay. There was a second question I had, but of course I can't remember it. But all right. Anyway, so continue with your story.
Yeah. So, you know, I just want to say that, you know, when you're in this church, it's very difficult to get out because of the indoctrination that they have, that programming that they have. So like I mentioned earlier, they give you a very us versus them mentality. But what that then creates is like it put a lot of strain on my relationship with family and friends, because they love to separate you from your family and your closest loved ones who are not in the church for one reason. Because if you're close to them and you start feeling like the abuse and you start getting like wore out of the church, or you start seeing the red flags, and you have people that are waiting for you, you know, that love you unconditionally, you'll go to them. You'll go to them as soon as you start, you know, feeling the pressure. But by cutting them all off, they isolate you, you feel so alone. So that even if you ever do feel like you want to leave, and you know, I've talked to so many members, you know, that have, you know, tried to leave in the past, but because they have no one, their families, you know, have cut them off because they cut their families off, you know, or they move states or cities, or, you know, they've given up careers. You know, a lot of people are college dropouts that were on their way to, you know, have these, you know, great careers, or, you know, some members were going to join the NFL, promising careers in the NFL, and, you know, all kinds of stuff, and you lose it all. And so if you ever do decide to even ponder the thought of leaving, you know, right away, you're like, no, I should stay because I have nothing to fall back on. And I think that that's something important that needs to be highlighted, is that, you know, these groups operate like that. They want to separate you from everyone so that, you know, you can always find your way back to the cult.
Okay, I just remembered my question, and maybe I misunderstood. When you were 18, you were living in Kansas, correct? And
yes.
A friend of yours came knocking on the door, and the leader of this cult, or at that time church, was the second coming of Jesus. He called himself the second coming of Jesus, correct?
Not the guy who was leading the church. The guy who called himself the second coming of Jesus had already died in 1985.
Okay. So who are we worshiping at this point?
So, okay, so let me give a little bit more info on that part of the doctrine. So what they do is, when you first come into the church, they teach you about this guy, San Hong. He was born in 1918. They say that he had to be baptized in 1948 at the age of 30, just like Jesus was, because he had to fulfill that prophecy, which they call the prophecy of David. And he had to exactly die in 1985. in order to fulfill completely the prophecy of David's reign. And so the reason I bring that up is because they'll say once he died, the year before he died, he had to reveal the most important secret of the Bible, which was his bride. And so what they'll do is they'll wordplay on the book of Revelation, because the book of Revelation talks about a bride and the bride of Christ and how she will appear at the last days and it'll come down from heaven. And what they'll say is they'll personify this bride, which is called Jerusalem in the Bible. And they'll say this Jerusalem is actually a person. It's actually God the Mother, a lady who lives in South Korea. And they'll say An Sang-hong was spiritually married to her. And he actually told us that we should follow her in 1984 at his last Passover. And they'll say, so after he died, all the power was actually, you know, transferred over to her. But actually, that's a big lie. This is something that most members actually do not know, is that even when you try to Wikipedia the church and understand the church history, it'll tell you that the church was founded in 1964 by An Sang-hong, but that's a lie. An Sang-hong actually established a church called Church of God Jesus Witnesses. That was the church that he established. And when he established that church, he got kicked out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, I believe in 1962, on a Saturday. The very next Saturday is when he established that church with about 20 members that left with him, right? And so the reason why this is important is because that was not the World Mission Society. The World Mission Society was actually a church that was part of the Church of God Jesus Witnesses. So when this man, An Sang-hong, who was married, by the way, and had kids, how could he be God and have, you know, children with his own children? Well, that's another story for another time. But anyway, he's establishing these churches all over Korea. One of the churches he established was in Seoul, Korea, where this lady is, Zonggyo-ja. And so there was rumors that he was having affairs with her while he was being married. And so what happened was when he actually died in 1985, this lady took the opportunity. She had some of his books and she began to proclaim her. She came up with the idea, her and the general pastor, who was basically someone that was studying under her, they came up with this idea for Mother God and just ran with it. And it wasn't until 1997 when the church came over to the United States, they changed their name from Church of God Jesus Witnesses to World Mission Society Church of God. But see, they never tell the members this. They'll tell you that World Mission Society is actually the original church that was established in 1964, but that's a lie. The reason they don't want you to look into that is because that church, the Church of God Jesus Witnesses, is actually still around, and they have crucial evidence that disproves the World Mission Society Church of God. So yeah, that's a little bit of that story.
I feel like I need a map or a legend to follow this. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Melody, go ahead. I think you have a question.
I have a couple questions. By any chance, did they have people change their names? Did you have to change your name to a cult name?
No, we didn't have to change our, like, the members specifically, but like a lot of the leadership did. So like, I don't know why they did that, but specifically the Koreans, they would change their names. They would have American names, even though you knew that was not their real name.
Right. So, and then my other question is, so is this church or this group technically a Seventh-day Adventist spinoff then? Is that what you would consider it, or where you would categorize it?
So I would say, because An Sang-hong was a Seventh-day Adventist, you know, when he got kicked out of the church, he made his own doctrine, but he still kept a lot of the core teachings of the Seventh-day Adventist, like the Sabbath day. But when the church, when he died and then it became the World Mission Society, this lady, Zonggyo-ja, she basically, you know, evolved even that doctrine. She took An Sang-hong's doctrine, a little bit of the Seventh-day Adventist doctrine, and then she mixed it with other cult teachings, and then she made this World Mission Society Church of God. So it's like a Frankenstein.
Have you been to South Korea?
I have not been to South Korea, thankfully, because I did not want to meet her. I never got the opportunity when I was in the church. I'm saying now that I'm out, I'm so glad I didn't get to, you know, meet her, because yeah, it would have been a waste of time. But I did meet the general pastor, who I guess I've mentioned him, but I haven't really talked about him or too much to kind of show you guys where what his role is in the church. This Zangyo-ja, even though she's known as the Mother God, this general pastor who's with her in South Korea in their main headquarters, which is they call it the Jerusalem Temple, he's like the pastor the head pastor. The story goes that when right before Ahn San-hong died, he held a secret meeting and he passed all of his books and all of his teachings to this general pastor guy and told him, you need to follow Mother God and you need to lead the members to heaven. So she's not the only one running the church. She has this guy, general pastor, who is also helping her run the church. But the thing is that from the intel that I've been getting, the guy, the brains behind the operation is actually this guy, general pastor, Kim Ju-chul. He's the one who, if you look at the IRS paperwork here in the United States, when he came to establish the church, everything's in his name. And he even mentioned that it's funny, you know, in the IRS paper that he filled out when he came to register the church here in the United States, he wrote that he's the founder of the church, not Ahn San-hong. And so that should be a problem for the members, because the members are taught Ahn San-hong established the church. So if the members that are watching this, ask yourself, why would he lie about that? And if he lied about that, what else is he lying to you about?
Well, that's where the deconstruction process begins, is when you start seeing, hearing the, and figuring out they're lying about this. I have two questions. You said this cult is worldwide. You said something about 7,000 churches and in many countries. I would imagine they're very dominant in South Korea. Like, it's a huge...
Yeah, so, I believe... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, like, for example, the Luz del Mundo cult, which is based out of Texas and Mexico. They're very, very big in Mexico. So this cult, the World Mission, I already forgot the name, the World Mission, their society, they're very prominent in South Korea, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, they're very big in South Korea. I can't remember the exact number of churches, but yeah, they're huge in South Korea.
How, and we asked a lot of our guests this question, because I think I know the answer. How did they make money?
So are you saying how do they make money now or in the beginning?
No, what kept it? Because having that many people, so did you have to pay a tithe?
Yes, yes. That's one of their number one teachings is, you know, you can follow all the rules, but if you don't tithe, they'll tell you you have no connection with God. You have to bring in that money. The funny thing is, when there's disciplinary like actions in the church, when a member disobeys or does something bad, you know, in the eyes of the church, they'll kick them out and they'll tell them you're restricted. You have to keep home service. But the one thing is, even though you're restricted from the church, you still have to tithe. So they always make sure that tithe and offering stays consistent. And for the sake of time, but let me just tell you guys one story. There was this brother in the church who, he was probably like in his early 20s, and he actually slept with, you know, a minor. She was, I don't think she could have been maybe 13 or 14 years old at the time. And this guy was known as like one of the, he wasn't like a main leader, but he was like a unit leader, group leader. And so this guy, he got disciplinary actions. You know, they told him, hey, that's not correct. You shouldn't do that. He got kicked out of the church, restricted, but he kept doing it. And then every time that they kicked him out, they let him back in because of he would always be tithing and offering. And, you know, he had a good job, so they would always let him back in. And then later, you know, he even brought another member in who was actually on his way to become an NFL player. And he recruited him from college. And, you know, he brought him and his girlfriend in. Well, a little time after that, he started sleeping with his wife or his girlfriend at the time. And so, you know, he got kicked out because of that a second time. And then I remember during that time, he had mentioned to us that he had bought like marble floor for the entire church. And a little bit after that, they let him back into the church. So that's just kind of like, yeah. So just to kind of show you like where their heart is at.
And what cult story wouldn't be complete without sexual abuse of a minor? I was waiting for that shoe to drop. So,
yeah.
Was that the only story that you heard of, or was this going on like sex with minors? Do you know any others?
So, you know, I haven't heard of that one specific. I've heard some in other cities, but I don't like to say anything on speculation. The only ones that I know for sure happened were, you know, was the one that I witnessed, and then a lot of the, you know, the abortion, the forced abortions, and even the arranged marriages. My cousin is actually in an arranged marriage. And so, you know, a lot of the Koreans that come over, that they send from Korea over here, they marry them with American citizens, you know, so that they can, like, get their green card, you know, and so illegal stuff.
Of course. They have their... this whole thing mapped out. So, and I'm not even going to get into the politics. So what, because there's a man in the office now that's probably going to put a stop to that. So they're going to have trouble. Walk us through your deconstruction. So what brought you to
I was going to say, rather than deconstruction, what caused him to start doubting?
Right. Thank you.
So there was a lot of red flags, obviously, that I saw, but I was one of those people kind of like, you know, I'm going to ride this till the wheels fall off, because I really believe that the doctrine is true. So even though I saw, like, outward signs, like red flags of, you know, people's character, but I was like, well, that doesn't matter when it comes to the truth. Like, to me, as long as what they teach is true, that's what I need to focus on. And so in 2020, I had gotten really sick. I went to the hospital. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I didn't feel too good. And, you know, by this time I had already done so much for the church. I even got an award behind me and a plaque from that place, because I was so good at recruiting people. You know, I had brought over 200 people, recruits, in 1 month. You know, and so I was like a very highly active member. I even lived in the church. They paid me to live in the church, to quit my job and everything. So I bring that, you know, up to say that I was a faithful member of the church. But in 2020, I got sick. I go to the hospital and they tell me that everything was good. They send me back home. You know, I was trying to keep the service during that time. It was during the pandemic. So they told us we couldn't go to the church. So they told us to keep, you know, home service. And they would basically have us watch like a video on YouTube and keep service that way. So I kept the service. After the service was over, man, I just felt so bad. Like, I knew something was wrong with me, even though the hospital had just told me that I was fine. And I remember telling my wife, I was like, no, something is wrong with me. Like, I'm seeing double. Like, I just did not feel like myself. I felt really sick internally. And I ended up going back to the hospital. And I was like, hey, I'm not leaving here until you guys check me good. And so, you know, they basically did an MRI, did some labs. And they were like, so your blood, it's being poisoned, because you have a stone lodge that got stuck in your bile duct, and it's not letting the bile flow out. And so they were like, we need to do an emergency surgery on you, because if not, you're going to die. And so keep in mind, right, this is during the pandemic in 2020. No one can come with you to the hospital because they got a restriction. And so it's packed. It's late at night. They're telling me, I'm thinking they're going to just give me a pill and I'm on my way home. Then they're telling me that my blood is being poisoned, that I'm essentially on my deathbed unless they do this surgery. And I'm by myself. It's nighttime. I'm free. Freaking out. So the only thing that I have to hold me over is my faith, right? I had never had to put my faith on the line before like this, because we had joked about it before. Me and members of the church were like, yeah, we'll follow this truth until the end. But it's not like when you're actually in the moment, and that's when it finally hit me. I felt no peace, no inner peace at all. And that's the thing is, you know, you do all these things for the church because you're basically trying to earn your way to heaven and, you know, to feel this peace. But I realized at that moment that the way that their salvation is set up, it's kind of like a hamster chasing, you know, food on a wheel. You're not ever designed to get it. You're not ever designed to feel that peace. At that moment, when I really needed that peace to come over me, instead of that, I felt fear. And I was like, man, what's going to happen to me if I was to die right now? So, you know, essentially the surgery happened the next day. Thankfully, everything came out good. They let me go home a few days after that. And I remember even during that time, I still believed in the doctrine. But the one thing is, it kept coming to my mind why I didn't feel peace at that moment. So what I did is I was like, you know what? There's got to be a reason. It's got to be my fault, because they teach you everything is your fault, right? And so what I did is I was like, you know what? I need to look at the Bible again. I need to see where I went wrong. Like, what did I do wrong? And so I kind of start going through the Bible and looking at, you know, the perspective of the apostles, and kind of seeing how the reason why they had faith was, even when they were getting thrown to the lions or burned alive as candles for the entertainment of the Romans, is because they weren't focusing on what they did. It was what Jesus did for them. And so I was like, well, that's lost here, because here it's all about what you do for yourself to get to heaven. So I realized at that moment, I was like, okay, something's off. So biblically, something's off. And then I was like, okay, now what I need to do is one thing that I've never done, which is actually look at the origins of this church. Because I forgot to mention this point, they do a very good and thorough job of telling the members not to investigate them, not look them up on the internet. Because if you look them up, it's like eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and you will spiritually die. You're basically condemned if you do that. So once I realized that I had no peace, and I realized that they were not correct biblically, then I was like, okay, this is a crock. So I need to look at what they told me not to look at. What are they hiding? And right. Man, when I tell you that I looked at the origins of the church and I realized all this stuff, man, that was the icing on the cake. That's what I needed to finally help me get out of that place.
And how did you get out? Because you said earlier something about that you can't leave.
Yeah, so I mean, so it's not that they physically hold you against your will, but they're always, you know, what I mean by they won't let you leave is more like they consume all of your time, right? So they don't want you to have any moments to think for yourself or be with family. So they're always making these events at the church so that you're there 24/7. But when I finally left, what I did was, you know, I remember the last service that I had gone to. Like, I was mentally checked out, and I didn't tell anybody this, but, you know, when I went to the church and I kept that final service, I was like, there's no way I can come back to this place. And so that was really the last time I left. I never mentioned it to anybody. I just left. And then once I left, you know, I started slowly speaking out to, you know, my friends, my wife, and they didn't take it too well when I first left, you know.
I can imagine. Yeah. Melody, he was Pimo, right?
I was thinking the same thing, Andrew, the same thing. Have you heard that term, Edgar?
No.
It's a Jehovah's Witness term, and it happens to people in any cult. It can happen to you. It's when you are physically still in the organization, but you've mentally already left. So it's physically in, mentally out is what it stands for, and they call it PIMO. And it's because you've figured out you don't believe it, but now you have to logistically figure your way out of this, because it's become your whole life, your whole world. And you're like, how am I going to step away from this when everything I have is wrapped into it? But yes, he was Pimo, Andrew. Perfect.
Yeah. I was thinking that, because he said he was physically, he said I was there, but I checked out mentally or something. So, all right. Yes. So, and then you, so how you slowly tried to get your family out of there, I would imagine. Tell us about your wife. Your wife probably was not happy.
Oh yeah. So that was probably the biggest battle was, you know, with my wife, because I remember, you know, when I first told her this, she thought I was crazy, and she was like, oh, you'll be back. And, you know, there is no other truth other than this. And then afterwards I started, you know, speaking out online and making videos, and in the church, that's a big no-no. There is no coming back from that. Then at that point, you're known as like Satan himself, a demon, an evil spirit, Judas. They got all kinds of names for it. And so basically, you know, they try to like make my wife, you know, like be against me. And, you know, because of the teachings, you know, automatically she's already going to feel like she's living with an evil spirit. Now, keep in mind, I'm making videos at this time exposing that place. So it was a very rocky situation. She didn't want to listen to me. You know, it just seemed like we were going to, I honestly felt that our marriage was going to be over, because there's so many times that I saw in the church over that span of 10 years that I was there, where I've seen members that left and their spouses stayed in. And so they were encouraged to separate from the unbelievers. And so I thought that that's what was going to happen to me and my wife. And, you know, a lot of my friends as well, they thought, you know, they cut me off. But, you know, thankfully, little by little, you know, I was planting seeds, you know, here and there. And eventually, you know, they started hearing me out. And so now they're out, thankfully, except my cousin.
Okay. So you've been out 5 years about?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And all right. So we got to begin to wrap up. Where are you faith in your faith now?
Yeah.
Faith
so
like, do you believe in God? Are you a part of another religion or what? Yeah, where are you in your faith today?
Yeah, so I'm still a Christian. I'm 100% a Christian. I still believe in God. But yeah, of course, it's hard. That's not always the case. And I respect everybody's, you know, walk, because I know that there's a lot of people that when they leave these high demand cults, they, you know, atheism, they become atheists or agnostic. And that's totally okay. I understand that, you know, when you leave, there's a lot of baggage, you know, that you walk away with. And so, you know, but for me, I chose to continue to be a Christian. What really helped me was just kind of like unpacking like biblical Christianity and early church history. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm at now.
Melody, you want to ask the final question?
I'm going to ask my final question, which is, do you have any advice for somebody who might be finding themselves in a group that they're questioning or thinking of joining a group that they might be seeing some red flags in?
Yeah. So my advice for the members, you know, anyone watching this that, you know, could be trying to join a cult or thinking about is, you know, investigate and pay attention to the red flags. You know, just the other day I was talking to some ex-members and we were kind of like just sharing thoughts of how many red flags we can actually remember of when we first joined. And it was alarming how many we actually remember, but we didn't act on it at that time. And so my advice would be, if you notice these red flags, ask yourself, right? If this is an honest organization, you know, what's up with these red flags? And, you know, ask the right questions. Never, you know, these type of organizations, they'll tell you that they love questions, but they really don't. They love the questions that they can answer, but not the ones that make them uncomfortable. And especially if they're trying to tell you to not research them, that should be the biggest red flag, because that already sounds like a toxic relationship, right? And so, you know, my advice is do your research, you know, before you fully commit yourself to any place, because a lot of these places claim to have the perfect truth, but they're always telling you, you know, we have the truth, but you can only learn it here. Don't ask anywhere else. And, you know, my biggest thing is, if that sounds a lot like they're hiding something, truth has nothing to hide. Only a lie does. The reason why a lie has something to hide, the reason why people that lie don't want you to investigate, is because as soon as you start investigating a lie, you're going to find out that it's a lie. And if they're telling you the truth, it doesn't matter how hard you investigate it, truth will always be truth. So that would be my advice.
And I'm going to add one more thing to that. If a friend of yours comes knocking on your door at 11 o'clock at night in a suit and tie asking you to join a cult, say no.
Or yeah.
At least take 24 hours to think about it and then do your investigation. So, Edgar, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Tell us where we can find you online. We'd love to see more of your videos and your advocacy.
Yeah, for sure. So on YouTube, we're at Diffusing the WMSCOG. So that's Diffusing the WMSCOG on YouTube. Also, same handle for TikTok and Instagram. So yeah, come check us out.
And Melody, we'll put all that in the show notes.
Absolutely. That will be in the show notes. Edgar, thank you so much for taking the time. And Edgar reached out to me on TikTok, I believe it was. It might have been Instagram, but he reached out to me and wanted to come on and share his story. And I'm so glad you did. Such a unique story. We had never heard of this one. And we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Edgar.
Thank you guys for having me.
And once again, we want to thank Edgar so much for coming on the show and sharing his story with us. I just wanted to touch on Andrew when he was talking about there at the end about how that if a church says, don't look into our history, don't Google us, don't do what I thought. All I could think of when he likened it to a toxic relationship, all I could think of, it would be like dating somebody and them saying, don't do a background check on me. You're going to find things you don't like.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, don't go look up my criminal history. Like, and then what is that going to do? That should just pique your interest to go, yeah, I should go look at their criminal history, right? I should go do a background check.
And how many cults have we interviewed, or people that we've interviewed that the internet was not available to them at that time? So,
yes.
You know, either prior to 2000 or the internet might have been available, but information on their cult was not up yet.
So yes.
So, but yes, because he was in there between 2010 and 2020, when it was still, the internet was booming. That's when the internet really blossomed. And yeah, so I can imagine how afraid these cult people were. And you can't say to how many thousands, but I forget how many people were in the cult.
A lot.
You can't tell everybody around the world. So those 8,000 churches, you can't go on the internet because you can't police that. There's no way
And I love their tactic was Googling us is like partaking of the fruit of the forbidden fruit of good and evil. And I'm like, my gosh, I was rolling my eyes. I'm just like, oh yeah. I thought how great they found a way to pull the Bible in and use that to tell people to not Google something.
And finally, somebody, because this is something that I've always said to myself, and I've mentioned this on the podcast. If God is all loving, and why does all these tragedies happen and people are dying and children are dying and children are being raped? And that's not what he was referring to. But when he was in the hospital, because if he had that infection or his blood was being poisoned, he was looking to God to give him peace.
Yes.
And it wasn't there.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I've been saying all this time. All these believers that have faith in something that's just not tangible,
right,
but they look for a sign from God. Well, he didn't get it.
And right,
so
exactly.
That's what broke him. Yeah.
Yes. So, and you know what? Funny, because I didn't think that's where that story was going. I thought for sure it was just going to be, okay, COVID happened and he wasn't going to the meetings. And so he just slowly started thinking for himself. No, he had more of a...
More of an
epiphany, because he had a specific incident, a specific moment, a tragedy happened that actually caused him to wake up.
He prayed in the hospital and asking for God for help with his fear. And he said that he didn't get any peace and calm. He got more fear. And that's what really opened up the door for him. So, wow.
What an articulate guy, great at telling his story. And we just so appreciate him coming on the show. He reached out to me. I think I said that already in the podcast, but I can't remember if it was on the mic or off the mic, but he found us, he reached out to us, wanted to come on the show. And I'm so glad he did, because I had never heard of this group, never heard of this cult, which with that many followers, I'm shocked I hadn't, but there are so many out there and there's so many more we haven't covered. Right, Andrew? Crazy.
So. And we have plenty of podcast space. So all the cults, come on over.
Yes, if you've got your story and we haven't covered your cult, reach out to us for sure. So we want to thank Edgar again for coming on the show, and thank all of you as well for tuning into Cultimatum. As always, your support is so appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you would just take a moment to rate and review us, especially on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. It really does help to create awareness and boost our ratings and help to get us more listeners. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes as well.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms such as Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, you can reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you're an ex-cult member and you're looking for additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out my other podcasts, the Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew podcast. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support by buying us a cup of coffee. It's a link in the show notes, and you click on that link and you can donate $5 or $10 to the show. It will help us keep our podcast going and our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.